Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Fibre. Super fast broadband, perfect for busy homes to be online at the same time.
Let us go to our first guest this morning, though, before we go on and look further into the papers and say good morning. Richard Branson, nice to talk to you again. How are you?
Good morning. I couldn't agree more with what you just said. Anyway, nice to talk to you.
Well, you know the way it is, Richard. In the workplace or in the schoolyard, bullying is a serious problem. And there was a time, as I always say, when you could be bullied at school, and it stopped at 3 o'clock when you went home. But now it can follow you 24/7. You know the score.
I just think it's one of the cruelest things you could imagine, and you just need every school kid, every person to sort of stand up and stamp it out, and just think, you know, it could be me that's being bullied, and just think how you'd feel if you were being treated in that way.
Yeah, so. Let me ask you about your Twitter bio, which I love: Thai-loathing adventurer, philanthropist, and troublemaker who believes in turning ideas into reality, otherwise known as Dr. Yes.
I think I might have even got your Thai one day.
you cut it off very publicly on the Late Late Show that time with your scissors, but you also, I think, one of your colleagues was saying that you like to put them up in a. You put them in one of your, is it a bar or a hotel in Chicago or something, was it?
We have a fun bar called Ricky's Bar, which has a lot of the scalps that I've managed to take over the years. I think it's a fun thing. I mean, I just you know, the stuffiness of people in business all having to wear ties because they're, you know, their bosses did when they were young, and their bosses before them. And I just personally think that people should dress as they feel comfortable.
Yes.
If they want to wear a tie, that's absolutely great. And if they don't want to wear a tie, that should be great as well. And if they want to wear jeans to work, they should be able to wear jeans to work. And just let people be themselves, be a bit more relaxed.
When you were hiring, I think it was the Australian wing, if you will, for Virgin, you were very specific in the fact that you said if you've got purple hair and you're working in a butcher shop and you can still smile after a tough day, you're the kind of cabin crew we're looking for.
Yes, I mean, I think that what you want in say cabin crew or staff generally is people that genuinely care about other people, people that love other people, who can smile in adversity and make you feel really, really welcome when you get on board a, you know, Virgin Atlantic plane or a Virgin Australia plane or a Virgin America plane. And I think, you know, that's why, you know, Virgin Atlantic has survived for 35 years and flourished and managed to sort of put up with, you know, all the dirty tricks that, you know, the BA did to try to get rid of us, and why we survived where most of the other airlines we were competing with, Pan Am, TWA, People Express, etc., have disappeared. So, you know, we've got great people, and if you've got great people, people will come back for more and more and more.
How is, we spoke before about Necker Island, and then we talked about, we haven't talked since Hurricane Irma hit it, because that was only a few weeks ago. Do you recall, you were there that night, that the at the time the hurricane hit? What happened?
Well, I've been in the Caribbean on Necker for three hurricanes before this.
Right.
They generally happen about once every 10 years.
Mm.
They're magnificent things. I mean, you know, like, it's incredible watching the sky and the seas and just the power of nature. And but, you know, we knew this was going to be different. I mean, the others were sort of Category 2 hurricanes, which, you know, houses and buildings and, you know, can pretty well sustain. Mm. This one was forecast as a Category 7, which is over 200 miles an hour winds. And we knew it was just going to be really dangerous and really damaging. And so there were 60 of us, a lot of young people who work on Necker. We all went down into a cellar right at the bottom of the house, and it hit ferociously. I mean, like, just howling winds and you know, like a screaming woman. I mean, it was just, it just went on for about 6 hours, and then there was a sudden hush, and we waited 20 minutes, and we poked our head out of the door, and it was just utter devastation. It was like a nuclear bomb had hit the island, and then the other side, we were in the middle of the hurricane, then where the eye of the hurricane, which is why there was no wind at all, and then suddenly the other side of the hurricane hit, and we threw ourselves back in the cellar again for another 6 hours, and when we came out, you know, obviously even further damage had been done, and you know, we'd spent the last month, you know, getting out amongst the community who've got had even, you know, weaker houses than us, and you know, I mean, people, 90% of the houses have either gone completely or been badly damaged, and we're working hard to try to, get them back up and running again, getting clean energy back into the BVI and the other Caribbean islands, getting the schools rebuilt. And people have been fantastic all over the world, because it's not just the British Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, a lot of the islands got devastated. There were three hurricanes all in a month, and obviously the worrying thing is this the beginning of the effects of climate change, or is it just a coincidence? And we'll have to see about that. But the seas were the warmest they've been in decades, and sadly, I think that may be as a result of climate change.
There's always that debate, isn't there, when there is a freak storm or a cyclical storm, that the climate change people will say, "We told you so," and the deniers, if they call, will say, "Oh, God, no, that happened 150 years ago. What are you talking about?"
Yeah, so I mean, I think the there's no question. The scientists say, 99% of scientists say that, you know, things will get worse. Mm. Storms will get stronger. And that's just a scientific fact. But whether this particular one was caused by that, who's to know? But I think what it does is spur us all on to try to turn the world into a world that's run by clean energy. And the world will be, much, much happier world if we can run it by clean energy. It'll mean that our bills that we get every month will be less. And we're not going to sort of see sky-high costs rising from dirty energy going through the roof again. So I think it's a win-win situation to try to get the world run by clean energy if we can.
Necker Island, Richard, strikes me as being a sort of a microcosmic look at your life, if you know what I mean. You bought it to impress the missus, initially, from what I understand, and then you thought about it as a recording studio place, and then maybe somewhere to debate the big issues, and then maybe a refuge for the likes of Diana and William and Harry, or the Obamas, or whoever. How would you define the island and its purpose and what it means to you?
I suspect it's the last thing that our family would ever sell. I mean, it's one of the most beautiful places in the world, or it was, and it will be again. Pristine, clear waters, a beautiful reef all the way around it, just a tiny little jewel in the Caribbean. I found it when I was 28. Managed to buy it for the price of a cheap flat anywhere in Ireland. It's been sort of the love of our lives, just trying to, create something magic on it, where we can, as you say, bring fascinating people and debate the issues of the world, and then more importantly, rather than just debating them, go out and try to do something about them. And I've been lucky enough to find myself in a position where, I can pick up the phone to pretty well anybody in the world and get through, and hopefully, hopefully get positive change, and that's what I spend, I suppose, about 70% of my time and life doing. Mm. Is working on setting up not-for-profit organizations that can tackle some of the big problems of this world, and obviously find it very satisfying when we do manage to tackle some of these problems.
And it's a relief, a source of relief as a place for people. I mean, when you saw the photos of the Obamas, you know, on the sea and having fun, they looked like a couple who'd been released from a very long detention at school.
Like, yeah, I mean, how were they?
This is post White House, eight years. Poor old Barack Obama aged very, very physically. I presume they were exhausted, slightly sense of imprisonment. Did you get the sense it was like school's out when they came to you?
Yes, exactly. I mean, they came literally the day after President Trump had been inaugurated, and they let their hair down. They were determined not to sort of dwell on, you know, what Trump was saying or doing, you know, back in America. And and we set ourselves a challenge. He wanted to learn to kite surf, and I wanted to learn to get up on a strange contraption that goes above the water, and we decided to sort of compete with each other out at sea, and so most of the time was spent literally on the water, just trying to forget about what was, you know, any damage that was going on in the States.
And how was he, do you think, his state of mind?
Oh, he's an incredible positive person. He doesn't dwell on, you know, on negatives. I mean, he definitely is the sort of person who talks about the glass being half full rather than half empty. And he just wanted a real break before, you know, getting back to work. And I'm sure that, you know, the second half of his life he will achieve as much as he's achieved in the first half of his life. He's not going to waste the position he finds himself in. His wife's not going to waste the position she finds herself in. And they can do extraordinary things. And President Carter is somebody I've known for many years.
With the elders.
And he has done as much since, you know, stepping down from presidency as he managed to achieve during his presidency. And I'm absolutely certain the same will happen with the Obama.
Who was the better kite surfer, you or Obama?
He won.
Okay, well, that's fair. That's a fair cop.
He's a very, very, very fit, very healthy, healthy guy, and he didn't lose much of that. Talking to him, you know, he was a wonderful family man. I mean, he did not miss one dinner with his family the whole way through his 8 years of presidency. So, you know, he had some very, very good, very, very strict rules, and he stuck to them. And so he managed to get a really good balance as well.
You met Donald Trump, a businessman down through the years, Richard, and you were kind of involved in reality TV for a little while, as was he. I think he sent you a note to that effect, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I've just put out a new book. My first yep. book was Losing My Virginity. My second book, which just came out today, is called Finding My Virginity.
I have it here in front of me. Yep.
I devote a chapter to Donald Trump, slightly reluctantly.
Why the reluctance?
Because I think we all spend far too much time talking about the man, but we have to, because he is president of the biggest nation in the world. My dealings with him. I mean, you know, the first time that he rang me up, invited me to lunch. I hadn't met him ever, and had the most bizarre lunch ever at his flat in New York, where he just spent the whole lunch talking about how he was going to spend the rest of his life committed to destroying five people who hadn't helped him when he was last, his last company went bust. And I said to him, there must be better things to do with your life than just, it's just going to eat you up. It's going to eat them up. And they haven't done anything overtly wrong. They just said that they wouldn't help you. But he would have none of it. I mean, that was going to be his life's mission. sadly, you know, he listened to me and he most maybe didn't just commit that as his life mission, and he decided to go for presidency and he somehow pulled it off. But he, I mean, I think there's a slightly worryingly dangerous side to that man, and I think we, you know, we've all got to watch him very carefully.
Do you think he's mad?
He's definitely very self-absorbed.
Do you think he's mentally unstable?
I think you know, people need to judge that. I mean,
I know people need to judge that. But do you think he's a bit unhinged?
Every day he comes out with statements that I don't know. I mean, you know, you had the awful event in Las Vegas the other day, and then instead of talking about the victims, he talks about about himself. I mean, he is what he is, and it's sad that such a person is running the free world.
He said in when he was watching your TV show, you quote this: "Dear Richard, now that I've watched your show, I wish you came to me and asked my advice. I would have told you not to bother. You have no television persona, and as I found out with others a long time ago, if it's not there, there's not a thing in the world you can do about it."
Yeah, I mean, I found these letters from him where, you know, he wrote to me saying, you know, how could you call the show the Rebel Billionaire? You can't possibly be a billionaire. You're in the airline business and so on. And I mean, you know, he's just a strange guy. The fact that he can find the time to write such vitriol to people, and instead of, you know, doing more positive things in life, you know, we had a really fun show. I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't like his show. It was more an adventure based show. We discovered one wonderful person called Sarah Blakely on the show, who went on to run Spanx and became the first female billionaire in America. Who did some very brave things. I think the first episode of the show, we had a walking across a plank at 10,000 feet between two hot air balloons, and then climbing a rope ladder to come up to the top of the balloon to have tea with me. So anyway, it was a very different kind of show to
Donald Trump. Would you, if you were invited to the White House for tea, would you go?
I wouldn't. I mean, normally I will give people, you know, a second. You know, I mean, if somebody behaves badly, you know, I will forget it and move on and, you know, shake hands and embrace again. But I think that because of the way Donald Trump talks about minority groups and you know, black people and, you know, and you know, the Muslims and so on and so on, I just don't have the respect to want to go to the White House.
You couldn't shake his hand, essentially.
I mean, I know that if you try, I would rather not anyway.
In 2015, Richard Branson, you were voted the businessman the British would like to see as Prime Minister. Did the thought ever cross your mind that you could replace Necker Island with 10 Downing Street? Or is it just too alien a prospect, even for you?
Look, I love getting out there and campaigning on specific issues, whether it's, you know, drug reform, whether it's, you know, capital punishment in America or other parts of the world, whether it's, you know, gay rights, women equality rights, etc., etc. I love spending a lot of time with my kids working on, you know, trying to reimagine education and so on. But I think party politics is not something that have ever interested me, and I've never got involved in party politics.
In this country, in Ireland, we had a couple of times in the last number of years a situation whereby we were asked to make big decisions on Europe, and we said no. And then they came back and said, we had what we were called, you could jokingly refer to as the Are You Sure referendum, which was a tweet. And then we said, ah, go on, yes. It happened on two occasions. When you saw Brexit happening, and I know you've spoken about your thoughts on Brexit in a sense that obviously you're clearly not happy about what happened. But when you saw, did your heart sink?
Yeah, I think it was the saddest thing that has ever happened to Europe, and the saddest thing that's ever happened to what was Great Britain, and it was as if the older group of British people took a gun in their hand and just shot it at their feet. They were misled horribly by one or two politicians.
Would you include Boris Johnson in that?
Of course. I mean, it was a ghastly, ghastly misrepresentation of reality. A picture was painted that was completely unreal. Britain was doing really well before the Brexit announcement. Since the Brexit announcement, we've dropped to the sort of bottom of all the European countries as far as growth is concerned, and this is just a taste of what's going to happen. I think the Irish people were very smart in changing their mind, and I think Ireland's benefited enormously from being part of Europe.
And do you think if a second referendum, in the very unlikely event, if it was put to the UK again, do you think hypothetically they would say stay, remain?
Absolutely, I believe that.
Really,
and I think that what's going to what will happen? I mean, I'm willing to forecast this, and we'll see if I'm right.
Go on, yeah.
Is that the young people overwhelmingly want to be part of Europe? They want to be able to live in 28 countries. They want to be able to work in 28 countries. They want to be able to travel to 28 countries without having to have passports everywhere. They are Europeans. They want to embrace Europe, there are some beautiful countries in Europe to travel and work in. And the older generation is dying off, and, that's happening. So, whether there's a second referendum, before Brexit happens, I'm sure the Tory party will do their best not to allow that to happen. But I think within 5 years, there will be a government in power in Britain that will ask for Europe for a chance for Britain to re-enter, and because there'll be so many young people who will be a little bit older by then, and so many of the older grandparents who voted for Brexit will have died off. I think Britain will become part of Europe again. But it's just a pity that all this time and energy and money and effort is all being spent on such a wasteful thing as Brexit, which could be spent on so many more positive things right now. And I think Britain's just going to carry on sliding down and down and down, and that's very sad.
What are you, before we let you go, what are you most excited about heading towards 2018, Richard? What's on your ever active brain? What do you want to achieve? What do you want to see done?
Well, obviously, in my book, I've talked quite a lot about Virgin Galactic and our space program and what we hope to achieve through that. And we are finally, only sort of 3 months away from Virgin Galactic finally being in space, and a few months further away from myself and other people starting to go up into space. And that's ridiculously exciting, and there's been 12 years of very hard work to get there, and so that's on the business side of Virgin. On the philanthropic side of Virgin, we have a wonderful group called the Elders that Nelson Mandela set up.
We have our Mary Robinson's in there, of course,
and Mary Robinson is absolutely one of the most incredible elders, they're doing fantastic work around the world, whether it's on conflict resolution issues or speaking out on climate change or many different issues. But So we obviously will be working hard with groups like the Elders to try to help them make a real difference in the world.
There's just one last comment that's come in on the text, Richard, which says, what a wonderful man Richard Branson is. He's so obvious. It's so obvious he worked for every penny, an educated man who left school at 15. You can't teach people what Richard naturally has. And as somebody who's very keen on education and the idea of reading and so on, I'd love to ask you a quick question before you go, which, because you alluded to it with your own kids and trying to get the education, the world of education, looked at and renewed and revived. People leave the school system after so many years, often, sometimes early, like in your case, and say, it just wasn't for me. How do we make it for them? How do we make school more interesting, if that's possible, to keep children engaged, to keep them reading, to keep them curious?
Well, it's a big subject, and I'd love to have a long talk with you about it.
You'll have to take the abridged version. We'll talk again about it, no doubt about it.
We shouldn't just stuff kids with facts.
Yes.
We should just stuff them full of things to try to get them to pass exams. We should bring education alive, make it real, make it fun, make it interesting. And that's something that I'd love to work with you and others on
well,
trying
we'll,
to.
Well, we'll thrash it out on another occasion. But in the meantime, Richard, I know you're coming to the Pendulum Summit in January 10th and 11th. So we'll see you there at that. That's the world's leading business and self-empowerment summit here in Dublin. But the book is you know, you have a lot of fans in this country and people who are either in business or just curious about the world, generally speaking, and the world that you inhabit and create. It's called Finding My Virginity. Congratulations on that. And thanks for taking the time to talk to us this morning. Good luck with everything. Thanks, Richard.
Lovely to talk to you as always.
Thank you so much. Richard Branson joining us live from his home in London this morning, UK at least, sitting in my car, says the text, listening to Richard, and I'm loving that interview. Good. The other speakers at the Pendulum Summit include Baroness, as she is now, Michelle Moan, who we had on the TV not so long ago. Very interesting Scottish woman with good story to tell. Jo Malone, of course, a lot of you will be wearing Jo Malone's scent today. Paul O'Connell, great rugby player, of course, and Randy Zuckerberg in the middle. PendulumSummit.com for information on that. Richard's book, as I say, it's his new autobiography, and I think that a lot of people will be fascinated by what he has to say in that. And Frank says the tradition of cutting ties goes back to the Flying Brigade. It's usual that when a male student pilot does his first solo flight, his tie is cut off just below the knot and the tail's pinned onto a display board. So that's a little take on that story. It's 25 to 10.